good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio program. Welcome to the program. Tonight, we have a number of very interesting topics to discuss. If you would like to hear the program in another venue, we are not only on the short wave, Thursday evenings at 8 at 4.840 megahertz. You can also hear us. The program is repeated Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on 7.490 megahertz. And you can also go to our website, to our archives. The website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. And you can listen directly on the internet at WWCR.com, 8 p.m. Thursdays. And that's is short for, if you forget the initials, it's Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR.com. And you can also hear us on a couple of other venues, KingdomStarRadio.com, KStarTalkRadio.com, and I believe all of these are listed on our website, if you haven't been able to take them down that quickly. And also Global Star Radio Network. So many, many ways to hear us. We're going to start off tonight with an article that appeared in Slate News, SlateNews.com, by David Linfield, June 5th, entitled Trump Orders Attorney General Pam Bondi to Investigate Biden's Auto Pen Use. And we have a little quote, aides abuse the power of presidential signatures. President Donald Trump is calling for a full investigation into whether Joe Biden's aides conspired to deceive the public and illegally exercised presidential authority through the use of an auto pen. Trump has ordered U.S. Attorney General Bondi to investigate whether those aides were concealing Biden's severe cognitive decline from the American people. In a formal memo ordering the probe on Wednesday, Trump declared, quote, this conspiracy marks one of the most dangerous and concerning scandals in American history. The American public was purposefully shielded from discovering who wielded the executive power, unquote. According to Trump, presidential signatures with the power to make laws, appoint judges, issue pardons, and direct national policy were routinely affixed to over 1,200 executive documents, even as Biden's mental state deteriorated. Trump stated, quote, it has become increasingly apparent that former President Biden's aides abused the power of presidential signatures to conceal Biden's cognitive decline, unquote. And Trump continued by citing Biden's, quote, serious cognitive decline, and claiming it was even worse in private. The president pointed to troubling examples, including the Christmas 2024 commutation of 37 violent federal death row inmates. Those inmates included mass murderers and child killers. The controversial order was executed via auto pen. Trump warned, quote, there are serious doubts as to the decision-making process and even the degree of Biden's awareness, unquote. He added that the use of the auto pen in the second half of Biden's presidency may have masked his inability to carry out his constitutional duties. Again, that was from SlateNews.com. The date was June 5th, and a short form of the title is Trump orders AG Pam Bondi to investigate Biden's auto pen use. And I heard on, I believe it must have been Fox News, earlier this week, Biden saying he did not remember anything about one of these things that he supposedly had approved. And I take it that this auto pen simply means that he doesn't physically sign the things. It's some kind of an electronic device that makes it appear to be a signature. Now from the People's Voice. German government admits open borders have failed. Quote, This country is no longer safe, unquote. Again, the People's Voice, June 5th. Sean Eddie Tabatabai. A parliamentary inquiry by the Alternative for Germany, abbreviated AFD, to the Ministry of the Interior, Digitalization, and Municipalities in Baden-Württemberg exposes a grim reality, with statistics showing migrants contributing to sexual assaults, knife attacks, and widespread insecurity on public transport. This trend, long ignored by proponents of open borders, contradicts efforts to promote public transport use, leaving Germans increasingly unsafe. RMX.news reports, in 2024, Baden-Württemberg's public transport system saw a total of 30,950 individuals identified as suspects for various crimes, averaging about 85 suspects per day. It is important to note that this figure does not include violations of immigration offenses, which can only be committed by foreigners, of which there are an additional 20,339 violations of immigration law, bringing the total recorded incidents in public transport to 51,289. And there are scattered throughout this article various websites that apparently give much more information and data. Going on, significantly, foreigners also lead the statistics across all other crime categories, including violent crime. Out of the 30,950 suspects for crimes on public transport, 62% were non-German, compared with only 38% German. A deeper dive into specific crime categories further highlights the trend. For violent crimes, and what I'll do to save time, it's a little boring to read all these statistics. I'll just give you the percents when they're given here. Out of violent crimes, 53% were committed by non-Germans, only 47% by Germans. For thefts, 64% were foreigners, 36% Germans. For drug offenses, 56% foreigners, 44% German. For weapons offenses, 61% were non-German, only 39% were German. And I'll skip down. It gives a great many other categories here. It gives some of the countries that the leading violent crimes immigrants came from. Talks about knife attacks, 57% were non-Germans. Only 43% were committed by Germans. A knife attack is defined as an offense or offense when attack with a knife is directly threatened or carried out against a person. In addition, foreigners only make up about 16% of the population of Germany, yet their extreme overrepresentation in the crime statistics is striking. And it goes on with some other statistics here. I won't read all of those, but it mentions the worst case was a train attendant who was threatened with a knife, said Epi Regnagel, the head of the Railway and Transport Union in Thuringia, during an interview. And it gives a few other things. So, immigration is not working out in Germany either, not the way we would wish it to. Well, closer to home, here's an article from the New York Post, and that, by the way, was from the People's Voice, June 5th. German government admits open borders have failed. Now, closer to home. New York Post, June 7th, by Susan Edelman and Deirdre Bardolf. New York City kids are so unchallenged by dumbed-down curriculum, they read nulls in math class. This one caught my eye. As a retired math teacher, Sounds pretty damning, but let's read on. Students in New York City, New York City's largest school district, are so bored by the Department of Education's dumbed-down math curriculum, they read novels in class, parents say. Families are forced to shell out thousands of dollars for tutors or flee in search of more challenging programs, parents say. Parents in District 2, which covers most of Midtown, Manhattan, Lower Manhattan, and the Upper East Side, are demanding accelerated math classes in elementary school and geometry starting in middle school to keep kids on par with their peers elsewhere in the city and country. And here's a quote. Kids are reading novels in math class because they are bored. Daniela Igorov, a member of District 2's Community Education Council, told Superintendent Kelly McGuire during a recent board meeting. Igorov said parents have told her they are considering moving to Brooklyn's District 20 because it will offer geometry in some middle schools next year. Then he gets up to take Algebra 2 in ninth grade. And this is what a lot of schools do in order to get the kids on a more accelerated track so that by the time they're seniors in high school, they can take calculus or other statistics or other upper-level math. So this is not unusual what the parents would like to have. But like so many things, dumbing down has taken its toll. I'll skip down a bit. Another quote, parents are leaving the system due to a lack of rigorous academic offerings. That was written in a letter to the school board by several parents. Meanwhile, other parents are turning to pricey math tutors and after-school programs like the Russian School of Mathematics, or RSM. Well, this is Lou speaking. I don't know that I've ever heard of that, but apparently, at least in New York City, it's a widely used program. Going on, a West Village mom and her husband with three children in District 2 schools pay a total of $6,400 to send all three to supplemental math programs at the Russian School of Mathematics, RSM, which starts teaching algebra concepts in first grade, she told the Post. She said, we want to make sure that our kids are well set for a successful future, having math ahead of what the public schools are currently offering, because that's not enough to be competitive. So, there you get the idea, again, from the New York Post. New York City kids are so unchallenged by dumbed-down curriculum, they read novels in math class. That was published June 7th. Now back to the People's Voice. Something more about the Biden regime. This was May 29th, and the title was Biden Regime Targeted Lockdown Opponents as Terrorists, Declassified Documents Reveal. Declassified documents expose the Biden administration's killing campaign to label lockdown opponents as terrorists, targeting constitutionally protected freedom of speech as extremism. Obtained through a Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, request by public and Catherine Herridge reports, the files reveal a coordinated effort by the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, FBI, and National Counterterrorism Center to monitor and redefine dissent against COVID-19 restrictions as a national security threat. The documents detail how federal agencies collaborated to surveil Americans who questioned or protested lockdown measures, casting their actions as potential domestic terrorism. This unprecedented overreach, critics argue, weaponized counterterrorism tools against citizens exercising their First Amendment rights, raising alarms about the erosion of civil liberties under the guise of public health. This is Lou speaking. I remember very well, I think it may have been Tucker Carlson when he was with Fox News, while one of the other Fox News anchors was interviewing the governor of New Jersey. And he was challenging the New Jersey governor about some of the actions being taken, that they were unconstitutional, unlawful, and destroying civil liberties. And the governor just kind of shrugged as if to say, well, we got to do it. Those may not have been his exact words, but that's the thing he implied. He sort of said, I know it's kind of taking away some liberties, but it's in some of the public's good. Well, that lame excuse could be given by any totalitarian dictatorship that didn't want to give the public their liberties. They could just say, we don't let people talk about these things because it's for the public's good. It's for the people's own good. Now, back to the articles. Naturalnews.com reports the December 2021 report listed views against vaccine and mask mandates as, quote, prominent narratives linked to violence, citing beliefs that the policies were part of a governmental or global conspiracy. These narratives could resonate with violent groups like QAnon adherents, the report claimed. Yet the document acknowledged such beliefs, and even quoting DVE-affiliated individuals are protected under the First Amendment, unless the speaker is a, quote, threat actor, unquote. That critical term, threat actor, however, remains undefined. Former FBI agent Steve Friend explained the policy's far-reaching implications. He said, this created an articulable purpose to begin an FBI assessment against specific individuals, unquote. Meaning, dissenting voices could face federal scrutiny merely for questioning mandates, with no evidence of violent behavior required. Catherine Herridge, titular co-founder of Public, noted the report, quote, draws a straight line between mandate opposition and domestic terrorism, unquote. A charge critics argue erodes liberties in the name of safety. Next section is entitled The Censorship Complex. The implications extended beyond surveillance. According to Friend, and that was Steve Friend, former FBI agent, the DVE label became a cudgel to pressure big tech into censorship. Excuse me. Quote, you don't want to propagate domestic terrorism? Take down these posts. And summarize the administration's leverage. Exchanges between agencies and platforms revealed in the Twitter files confirm this collusion. In 2023, the House investigated FBI collusion with Twitter to suppress pandemic-critical content. Dr. Mary Holland, CEO of Children's Health Defense, branded the policy Orwellian. She said, quote, the goal was never public health. It was obedience. Labeling dissenters as terrorists monopolizes the narrative. They're not allowed to question central authority, unquote. The February 2022 DOJ report added urgency, warning school vaccination mandates could, quote, spur conspiracy theories, unquote, and, quote, increase the potential for violence, unquote. Meanwhile, parents in Maine, Vermont, and North Carolina sued school districts after children were vaccinated without consent, a practice the report paradoxically claimed could incite attacks. Jeffrey Tucker of the Brownstone Institute called it, quote, a roadmap to weaponize public health, unquote. He noted mandates quickly mutated from pandemic measures into tools to purge dissent, requiring vaccination for medical insurance, jobs, and education, thereby ferreting out dissenters via humiliation. Now, there's more in this article. Let me see if I can just pick out a couple of good things here. Nebraska chiropractor Ben Tapper, another disinformation dozen. That was a group that were described by the government as possible terrorists. So Ben Tapper, another disinformation dozen, LSD, echoed other skepticism. He said, quote, labeling opponents terrorists was a smear to silence dissent. Our courts won't fix it. The system is rigged, unquote. And it sums up by saying, as Jeffrey Tucker warns, if a democratic society requires obedience to stay safe, what's left of democracy, unquote. The Biden-era papers are more than a pandemic relic. They're a blueprint for how governments can and will hijack crisis response to punish dissenters. The real test may come next time. And this time, the mask might be figurative. All right. Now we come to LifeSite News. That, by the way, was the People's Voice on May 29th. Biden regime targeted lockdown opponents as terrorists. Next one from LifeSite News. Trump administration launches probe into free speech crackdown in Britain. This is by Jonathan Van Maren. Tuesday, May 27th, 2025. The Trump administration is doubling down on its commitment to stand up for freedom of speech in Europe with an extraordinary move. According to GB News, Trump, quote, sent a team of U.S. individuals, or officials rather, to the U.K. to investigate concerns over freedom of speech restrictions, especially regarding pro-life activists who have been arrested for silent protests outside abortion clinics, unquote. Vice President J.D. Vance made international waves in February when he confronted European leaders at the Munich Security Conference on their free speech record, singling out the UK's persecution of pro-life protesters. Vance noted that veteran Adam Smith Connor had been convicted and sentenced to pay thousands of pounds in legal costs simply for praying silently outside an abortion clinic, and cited Scotland's draconian buffer zone that could apply to people praying inside their own homes. UK and Scottish politicians rushed to condemn Vance's accusations. In the course of one media interview, in which a Scottish MSP called Vance's speech absolute nonsense, Gillian McKay, the parliamentarian who championed the buffer zone bill, was forced to admit that the law could apply in precisely the way that Vance had described. Prime Minister Keir Starmer attempted to defend the government's free speech record, but Trump has doubled down, most recently noting that the U.S. is monitoring, that word monitoring is in quotes, monitoring the case of Lucy Connolly, a mother and wife of a conservative ex-counselor jailed for 31 months for an angry and ill-advised ex-post after a terrorist butchered three little girls with a knife at a dance class in Southport. Many have doubted that the mother received more jail time for a swiftly deleted social media post than others have received for genuine crimes. We have a quote here. Lucy Connolly is effectively a political prisoner and should be freed immediately, said Suella Braverman, the former Tory Home Secretary. She also said she made an ill-advised tweet, soon deleted, that the U.S. is investigating this case is a sad indictment of the dire state of free speech under the Labour Party, unquote. It appears that the Trump administration's commitment to free speech is more than just virtue signaling. The U.S. State Department sent a five-person team to the U.K. for several days to interview UK government targets, and then report back to the White House on their findings. According to GB News, quote, the diplomats from the U.S. Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor traveled to London in March to, quote, affirm the importance of freedom of expression in the UK and across Europe, unquote. The delegation was led by Samuel Sampson, a senior advisor to the State Department. During their visit, the U.S. team met with five British activists who had been arrested for silently praying outside abortion clinics across the country, The Telegraph reports. The delegation met with pro-life activists Isabella Vaughan Spruce, Rose Doherty, Adam Smith Connor, Olivia Tosici Brown, and Father Sean Gow, a Catholic priest, who shared their experiences of being detained while silently praying. Doherty, who was a 74-year-old grandmother, was the first to be arrested under Scotland's new buffer zone law in February outside Queen Elizabeth University Hospital in Glasgow. GB News reported that, quote, the meetings took place at what was described as a nondescript office block away from public attention, unquote. And skipping down, those progressive politicians have long leveraged their power on behalf of the LGBT movement, abortion activists, and other ideological allies. J.D. Vance is illustrating what it looks like for a conservative politician to do the same thing. Once again, that was from LifeSite News. Trump administration launches probe into free speech crackdown in Britain. And the date was Tuesday, May 27, 2025. All right, now a little different note. This was from Fox News. Biblical subject matter. Archaeologist uncovers compelling evidence of true location where Jesus turned water into wine. Excavations reveal pilgrim complex with altar and stone vessels dating back 1,500 years. This is by Andrea Margolis, Fox News, June 3rd, 2025. And it reads, a historian believes he's found the location of Jesus Christ's first miracle and has newfound evidence to back it up. Scripture gives limited details about Jesus' first miracle, which is said to have taken place at Cana. The Gospel of John states that Jesus turned water into wine during a wedding in the village. This is a quote from the Gospel. Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. The Gospel continues, then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. The prevailing theory states that Kafer Kanna, K-A-F-R-K-A-N-N-A, an Israeli town in the Galilee, was the true location of Cana. Pilgrims have long venerated the site, according to the Catholic Encyclopedia of 1914. But historian Tom McCullough says that Cana was actually located 5 miles north of Kafer Kanna. The site, called Kerbet Kanna, was a Jewish village from 323 BC to 324 AD. McCullough taught religion and history at Center College until his retirement in 2017. He told Penn News that Kerbet Kanna represents the most compelling evidence so far. The main piece of evidence is a series of tunnels used by Christians, marked with various crosses and references to Christ dating back over 1,500 years. Akala said, quote, we have uncovered a large Christian veneration cave complex that was used by Christian pilgrims who came to venerate the water-to-wine miracle. This complex was used beginning in the late 5th or early 6th century and continued to be used by pilgrims into the 12th century Crusader period. During his excavation, McCullough also uncovered an altar and a shelf with a stone vessel. He noted that there was space for five additional jars, consistent with the biblical account of six stone jars. On the walls of the complex, his team of excavators also uncovered references to Kyrie Eleison, a Koine Greek phrase meaning Lord Jesus. And Kyrie, I believe is pronounced correctly, and I believe that perhaps the I there on the second word is pronounced like a J. So the English spelling would be J-E-S-O-U, for Jesus. And McCall also said the pilgrim texts we have from this period describe what pilgrims did and saw when they came to Cana of Galilee match very closely what we have exposed as the veneration complex. And speaking to Penn News, McCauley also used the words of Flavius Josephus, a first century Jewish historian, to back up his argument. He said, quote, his references to Cana align geographically with the location of Kerbet Kwana and align logically with his movements. The reference to Cana in Josephus, the New Testament, and in the rabbinical texts would argue the village was a Jewish village near the Sea of Galilee and in the region of Lower Galilee. He added, Kerbet Kwana fulfills all of these criteria. So again, that was from Fox News, June 3rd, 2025. Archaeologists uncovers compelling evidence of true location of Jesus' miracle. Well, now, back to the people's voice. We have just for a little curious little article. Scientists baffled by a mysterious metallic spear discovered in Colombia. That would be the nation of Colombia in South America. This is by Neam Harris, May 27th, 2025. A metallic orb that was seen flying over a town in Colombia has left scientists baffled, with some claiming it must have been alien, or must have alien origin. Footage of the sphere, which is spotted on March 2nd, moving above the town of Buga, B-U-G-A, in Colombia, shows it falling out of the sky and landing in a forested area, according to ex-user Truth Polex. Jose Luis Velasquez, one of the researchers studying the three-layered sphere, noted that it shows, quote, no welds or joints, unquote, characteristics normally indicative of human manufacture, which has further strengthened his belief that it has an extraterrestrial, let me say it again, extraterrestrial origin. The New York Post reports the orb, which weighed about 4.5 pounds and was cold to the touch when found, had etched into it a series of ancient-looking symbols, including runes and characters from the Ogham and Mesopotamian writing systems. Locals claim that the object is of alien origin, and even researchers admit they can't say where it came from. The sphere has no welds or joints, which would typically indicate it was made by humans, according to Dr. Jose Luis Velasquez, who is a radiologist hired to examine the sphere. Dr. Velasquez said in a video shared on X, quote, it is of artificial origin in that it shows no evidence of welding, and its internal structure is composed of high-density elements. More testing is needed to establish its origin. Scientists use AI to decipher what they believe its symbols mean. And, quote, the message purportedly reads, the origin of birth through union and energy in the cycle of transformation, meaning point of unity, expansion, and consciousness. The research team studying the orb, or orb that should be said, we interpret it as a message to humanity, encouraging a collective shift in consciousness to help Mother Earth, especially considering the current issues with pollution and environmental decline, unquote. Well, there's a great deal more to the article, but I'll stop there. There are also a couple of references to, well, at least one Twitter article where you can probably read more details. This, what I just read was from the People's Voice, May 27th, scientists baffled by mysterious metallic sphere discovered in Colombia. Well, I don't know what to think of that one. I'll let you readers or listeners form your own opinions. As I said, you can look into it more deeply if you wish to. Now, getting back to the COVID times that we've gone through in the last 5 years. And by the way, if you'd like a copy of our book, I have one I need to get out to someone. I need to look at the people who wrote to me. So if you haven't got it yet, I'll soon be mailing it out. Anybody else who would like a copy? We had a few more left. Just write to me, Lou, L-O-U, Cavely, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And the book is free. If you can make a small donation to help out, that would be most appreciated. And if you can afford more, that would be even more appreciated. So we thank you ahead of time for your interest and your support. Now, another article from LifeSite News. Biden administration knew COVID shot risks in early 2021, but kept silent for months. That's from a Senate report. Now, this was from Calvin Freeberger, Wednesday, May 28th, 2025, once again from LifeSite News. The Biden administration was aware of cardiovascular dangers associated with the COVID-19 vaccines as early as its second month in office, yet delayed disclosing them for months, according to a report by the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. The Daily Wire obtained a copy of the report, which uncovered a February 2021 email from Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, Vaccine Safety Technical Work Group, or VAST, co-lead, Laurie Markowitz, that reported of the almost 1,000 post-vaccination deaths reported at the time, those with quote-unquote known causes were, quote, often cardiovascular, unquote. The report further noted that Israel, which began vaccinating earlier than the U.S., notified CDC officials that it found, quote, large reports of myocarditis, particularly in young people, following the administration of the Pfizer vaccine, unquote. However, quote, rather than provide the public and health care providers with immediate and transparent information regarding the risk of myocarditis following mRNA COVID-19 vaccination, the Biden administration waited until late June 2021 to announce changes to the labels for the Moderna and Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines based on the suggested increased risks of myocarditis and pericarditis. The report found that to be true. Even though CDC and FDA officials were well aware of the risk of myocarditis following COVID-19 vaccination, the Biden administration opted to withhold issuing a formal warning to the public for months about the safety concerns jeopardizing the health of young Americans. And I'll jump down. Senator Ron Johnson had some comments. He's the Republican senator from Wisconsin. He said that the Biden administration stonewalled his committee in the Senate But the Trump administration is, quote, beginning to produce records pursuant to the chairman's subpoena that should have been provided years ago without redactions to Congress and, to Congress and the public, unquote. The Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS, V-A-E-R-S, reports 38,615 deaths, 220,701 hospitalizations, 22,531 heart attacks, and 29,150 myocarditis and pericarditis cases as of April 25th, among other ailments. CDC researchers have recognized a, quote, high verification rate of reports of myocarditis to VAERS after mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccination, leading to the conclusion that underreporting is more likely than overreporting, unquote. And again, VAERS is the Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And like so many things with the federal government, it probably, if they say here, greatly underestimates the number of bad effects of these vaccines, because people have to go through a certain amount of red tape to even report a case of myocarditis or pericarditis. And just to sum it all up, an analysis of 99 million people across 8 countries published in the journal Vaccine, quote, observed significantly higher risk of myocarditis following the first, second, and third dose of mRNA-based COVID vaccines, as well as signs of increased risk of pericarditis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, and other potential safety signals that require further investigation, unquote. In April 2024, the CDC was forced to release, by court order, 780,000 previously undisclosed reports of serious adverse reactions, and a study out of Japan found, quote, statistically significant increases, unquote, in cancer deaths after third doses of mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccines, and offered several theories for a causal link. Well, there's more information here. I think I'll stop there because it becomes a little bit repetitive, but it has some good information. And this is the kind of thing my late wife, Phoebe Elizabeth, and I were talking about in our book, the book I mentioned, COVID and Coming Chaos. Much of this was out in the open 2 summers ago. And it should be no secret to anyone that finally, the government in Washington is being forced to open up. And I'll say that the Trump administration is much more open to releasing this information. But it's becoming more and more obvious every day that the lockdowns were probably totally unnecessary. Schools were disrupted. Kids' education was set back by as much as a year, and all kinds of things were done, not to mention the ill effects of the vaccines themselves on the health of those who took them. All right, and once again, that was some LifeSite news. The date was May 28th, 2025. Biden administration knew COVID shot risks in early 2021, but kept silent for months. Senate reports. Now, as for Mr. Biden himself, we have something from Slay News back on May 19th by Frank Bergman. Top experts respond to cover-up of Biden's aggressive cancer. Inconceivable it was not spotted during the presidency. America's leading experts have been weighing in on the news that former President Joe Biden has been diagnosed with an, quote, aggressive, unquote, form of prostate cancer. The news has led to allegations of a cover-up, due to the cancer's advanced stage so soon after Biden left the White House. His cancer was given a Gleason score of 9 and a gray group of 5, a devastating stage of the rapidly spreading disease. The diagnosis came days after doctors found a small nodule on his prostate during a routine health exam. However, several doctors have argued that it is inconceivable for Biden to have such an advanced form of cancer that wasn't spotted during his presidency. First, some Donald Trump Jr. accused Biden's team of a cover-up. Trump Jr. shared a screen grab of a post from physician Dr. Stephen Quay, Q-U-A-Y. Quay called prostate cancer the easiest cancer to diagnose when it first starts and to watch it progress to bone metastases. Some of America's top doctors also questioned how a former president could be diagnosed with a late stage of prostate cancer. As many have noted, prostate cancer can be detected early with routine blood work recommended for all men over the age of 50. In a post on X, Dr. Howie Foreman, a professor of radiology and biomedical imaging, Polk Health Management, and economics at Yale, wrote, quote, "It is inconceivable that this was not being followed before he left the presidency," unquote. It noted that the test for prostate-specific antigen would have shown he had cancer, quote, "for some time before this diagnosis, given how aggressive it is." Now I'll skip down a bit. Other scientists and medical personnel have added their analysis in much the same way. And it says in a follow-up post, the doctor, and that was Yale radiologist Dr. Foreman, questioned whether Biden really never had screening these past dozen years, or if he has always had a normal PSA prior to age 70. It's just, and this is the doctor speaking, Dr. Foreman, "it is just so odd to discover this with bone metastasis in a man of his stature and with his access to care," unquote. Fox senior medical analyst Dr. Mark Siegel also seemed confused about how Biden's diagnosis could suddenly emerge. Siegel said Sunday night, before this article, and the article again was dated May 19th, on the previous Sunday, he said, "This was found by physical examination by a prostate exam. A lot of times we find an elevation in prostate-specific antigen, PSA, and then we go after it," unquote. Siegel noted that he tests all of his male patients over the age of 45 for the disease. Once a test comes back for an increased PSA, Siegel said he automatically orders an MRI for the patient. After an MRI, a decision is made about whether to conduct a biopsy. But in Biden's case, doctors only performed a biopsy once. He claimed he was experiencing urinary issues. Siegel said this is a sign that the cancer has already spread. Well, I'm going to skip down. You get the gist of that article. The question arises, is this a cover-up? Did he really have both a diagnosis and care and never told the public? And it was concealed, like so many things in his presidency, from the public? Or was the negligence on the part of his doctors? That seemed very doubtful that something as common as this. Well, we'll leave it there, and you can get more details again by going to Slate News. Among other sources, I think this was in a lot of different news sources. But for Slate News, the date was May 19th, top experts respond to cover-up of Biden's aggressive cancer. And we have another article. I'll just read a small part of this because it's to a certain Atlantic spent repetitive. From The People's Voice by Baxter Dimitri, May 19th. Quote, too fast to be natural, unquote. Top doctors warn Biden's turbo cancer diagnosis raises alarm about mRNA aftermath. They're talking about the possibility, nothing certain, but the possibility that maybe mRNA vaccines caused this cancer to grow rapidly. Because there have been other reports about various so-called turbo cancers growing very rapidly after mRNA injections. A little bit of good news, just read the headlines or so here from LifeSite News. Freedom Convoy trucker Harold Jonker acquitted of all charges. This was in Canada. You might remember some time back, there were a bunch of, and actually it was in 2022, there was a Freedom Convoy protest movement, a lot of truckers. And the government of Canada seized their accounts and did a lot of malicious things. But on May 20th, Justice Kevin B. Phillips of the Ontario Superior Court of Justice acquitted Harold Jonker of all charges. Jonker runs Jonker Trucking Incorporated out of Caister Center in Ontario's Niagara region and rose to prominence for his role in the Freedom Convoy protest movement that sought to bring an end to all COVID-era mandates in Canada. Once again, all of this, what's a polite word to use? Nonsense that was foisted upon us by the governments of the U.S. and Canada, especially Canada and Australia, trying to force mandates and lockdowns down people's throats. And we now see there was very little evidence of that to justify these draconian actions. Well, now here's from the New York Post. One of our devoted listeners has sent me a whole series of articles. I wish you could read them all, but this one is especially good. This is from the New York Post, Monday, June 2nd of this year, by Miranda Devine, who's appeared a number of times in Fox News. And the title, Jill, comma, Work Hubby, Key and Cover-Up. There are a few doubts in the White House about Jill, Lady Macbeth, Biden's role in covering up her husband's cognitive deficits as she urged him to run for re-election. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt made that point crystal clear from the press room podium Thursday, saying the former First Lady, quote, needs to answer for lying to the American people and shielding her husband away from the cameras, unquote. For the normally circumspect Leavitt, it was a damning indictment. And the quote goes on, again from Caroline Leavitt, I think, frankly, the former First Lady should certainly speak up about what she saw in regard to her husband and when she saw it and what she knew, she told reporters at a White House briefing. Anybody looking again at the videos and photo evidence of Joe Biden with your own eyes and a little bit of common sense can see this was a clear cover-up, and Jill Biden was certainly complicit in that cover-up, unquote. Some, like Leo Terrell, a senior counselor in the DOJ's Civil Rights Office, went so far as to say Jill was guilty of, quote, elder abuse, unquote. Of course, Joe Biden's delusional ambition is most at fault. He knew what he was doing when he ran for president in 2019, but needed teleprompters to recite a basic stump speech he used to know by heart. He knew what he was doing when he decided to run again in 2024, despite his health problems. What is becoming clear is that the social climbing former First Lady and the aide she calls her work husband, Arizona-born former child actor Anthony Bernal, played a bigger role in his con job than previously has been acknowledged. David Hogg, recently ousted as vice chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and Deterian Jones, a former Biden White House staffer, points a finger at Bernal as the chief puppeteer in a new undercover video from Project Veritas released last week. Bernal had, quote, an enormous amount of power, said Hogg. Jones described Jill's diminutive gay factotum as, quote, scary, like a Wizard of Oz type figure. The general public wouldn't know what he looked like, but he wielded enormous power, unquote. According to Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson's new book, Original Sin, Jill was one of the most powerful first ladies in history. And that gave her Rasputin-like senior advisor outsized influence among the so-called Politburo that controlled her husband. When Biden was hidden away during the 2020 campaign in his Delaware basement, using the COVID pandemic as an excuse, Bernal was one of only two staffers allowed to move to Wilmington to tend to their daily needs. When Biden was holed up at his holiday house in Rehoboth Beach last year, wrestling with the decision to abandon his reelection campaign after his disastrous debate performance, Bernal was one of only four aides allowed by his side. Bernal, who boasted the title of Special Assistant to the President and reportedly earned the maximum White House salary, began working for Jill during the 2008 presidential campaign when he was hired to help her transition into the role of Second Lady. Well, I see that our time is running out. This is a good article. You may want to even get a copy of it. It might be available online. New York Post, June 7th. Entitled Jill Work Hubby, that's in quotes, Work Hubby, Key and Cover Up. Well, I see our time is running out. Our music is on. Thank you for listening to The Divided Kingdom. Tune in again next week and look at our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Good night.